This is edition number 2021 of The Mardler, recorded in Aylsham on Friday the 12th of June 2026. Hello, you're listening to The Mardler, the weekly talking newspaper for North Norfolk. Today we bring you the week's news and views from the North Norfolk News of Thursday the 11th of June 2026. My name is Jill Mellows and my fellow readers are
Sue Hill,
Jane Bradbury.
On the notice board today, please join us in wishing a happy birthday to two of our long-standing copy and dispatch volunteers, Margaret Phillips, and also to Thelma Lloyd, who is celebrating a special birthday today. This week, the sun will rise around 4:30 a.m. and will set at about 21:15 p.m.
The magazine supplement will follow a little later in the programme and includes Dawn French's new book, A Young Girl's Nature Discovery, a profile of a clay guide, and the history of Cromer Pier.
But we begin with the main news items, which include widespread protests at proposed new chicken farm, a bumper Norfolk fruit harvest, seals on a new banknote, and a row over Cromer Pier funding. Let's start with those lead stories.
More than 1,000 objections have been raised against controversial plans to build a chicken farm in Norfolk. E.F. Harold, based around Aylsham, is looking to build four poultry houses on land off the street in Alton near Causton. This would house 180,000 broiler chickens at any one time, equating to 1.36 million every year, with 7.6 annual cycles. Those who live nearby have criticised the proposal, saying it poses a significant threat. Among their concerns are noise, congestion, air pollution, an increase in heavy goods vehicles, and the impact on nearby wildlife. Now, Communities Against Factory Farming, CAF, has joined the fight to support residents who are concerned about the application. Jo Lazarus, a spokeswoman for CAF, said, "We have serious concerns that this intensive farm could pollute local water and air quality and harm residents' quality of life. Worryingly, the application says that all the manure from the site would be sent to Thetford Power Station, which is due to close in 2027. As such, there is no credible plan for what to do with all the waste that would be generated. This development would use fast-growing poultry breeds that are predisposed to health problems, leading to unnecessary suffering, with many struggling to walk as their legs are unable to carry their weight. Few residents would invite this large-scale suffering on their doorstep." Alton Parish Council has objected to the application, highlighting another intensive poultry unit only 500 metres from the site, which could pose biosecurity risks. Causton Parish Council added that it was very concerned about the number and size of vehicle movements associated with this proposal. The farm, which has been operating in Norfolk for more than 50 years, said this is a strategic investment to secure the future of the business. A design and access statement added that the development will support local food production, strengthen the rural economy, and provide a secure income stream for a long-standing family enterprise. To view the application in full, visit the Broadland District Council planning portal using the reference 2026/0314.
They might have been a little later coming this year, but Norfolk's staple summer crop is set to be the sweetest in years. Cooler spring temperatures have delayed the start of the strawberry season in the county, but growers say the wait will be rewarded with berries packed with exceptional flavour. According to British berry growers, which represents fruit producers, the cooler spring slowed the ripening process, allowing strawberries to remain on the plant for longer and develop a richer taste profile with balanced natural sweetness. The result is a crop of large, juicy and flavourful berries, with growers describing this year's British strawberries as worth the wait. Simon Turner, director of Sharrington Strawberries, beside the A148 at Melton Constable near Holt, said, "The quality is absolutely excellent and they're especially sweet. It doesn't happen every year. We grow in the soil, so they pick up the trace elements that make them very flavoursome. We've got lovely sandy soil here locally for the production of strawberries." Nick Marston, chairman of the British Growers, says the start of the British strawberry season is always a highly anticipated moment, and whilst the cooler spring has meant consumers have had to wait a little longer, this year the quality of this fruit is outstanding. An extended maturation period helps ensure shapely strawberries and enhances their flavours during the development, with the cooler temperatures allowing our berries to build up an incredible sweetness and size. The cooler conditions followed a spring characterised by dry weather, sunny intervals and chilly overnight temperatures, according to the recent analysis from the Met Office. Many southern counties, where a high number of British berry growers operate, also recorded their sunniest April on record. The abundance of sun paired with careful watering by growers during one of the driest Aprils in years has seen an exceptionally high quality yield this season.
A sea-going mammal, which loves basking on the Norfolk coast, could be only a whisker away from appearing on the country's new run of banknotes. The Bank of England is asking the public to give their views on a selection of wildlife native to the UK that will appear on its next set of paper money. Working with a panel of wildlife experts across the UK, the bank has produced a shortlist of animals that could become the central image on their new £5, £10, £20 and £50 notes. Among the 18 nominations, across the three categories of mammals, birds and amphibians, insects and fish, is the grey seal, no stranger to Norfolk's shores. And local campaigners, friends of Horsey seals, say the move could help the species cash in on some much-needed awareness. They said, "If you can spare a minute just to cast your vote, it would be appreciated. You can select up to six different species, hopefully one of which will be the grey seal. It would be great in terms of raising awareness if we could get the grey seal on one of our banknotes. If it does end up being chosen, you might end up with a seal in your pocket," they added. The charity has used AI to generate an image of how a grey seal might appear on a new £5 note. The public can select up to two examples from each category in a consultation running until July the 3rd. To cast your vote, visit https://www.bankofengland.co.uk/banknotes/help-us-to-design-our-next-series-of-banknotes.
Norfolk's only End of the Pier Theatre is to undergo a major overhaul after councillors backed a multi-million pound renovation plan. North Norfolk District Council's Liberal Democrat Cabinet voted unanimously to commit £2.4 million to refurbish Cromer's Pavilion Theatre. The money, which will be borrowed if no grant funding can be secured, will pay for new insulation, a modern heating and cooling system, refurbished seating and upgraded audio and lighting equipment. The pier, which celebrates its 125th anniversary this year, has seen significant investment in recent years, including improvements to its structure and backstage facilities over the winter. However, the auditorium, which was originally built as an open-air bandstand in 1901 before being enclosed in 1905, has remained largely untouched of late. In summer, audiences have sweltered, while winter performances have left patrons reaching for their coats. North Norfolk District Council, NNDC, has argued that the refurbishment would boost income from car parks, support local job creation, and strengthen the tourism industry. However, councillors at the Cabinet meeting questioned whether the authority should be committing further borrowing to the historic asset without more tangible financial justification. Christopher Cushing, the leader of the Conservatives at NNDC and the councillor for Fakenham North, asked what benefits taxpayers would gain from the investment. Normally, if you have an investment in a company, which is effectively a business, there's usually a decision that is generally made on a return on investment. So that's a sizeable amount of money that we are going to plough into the structure. So what is the financial payback? This is a familiar theme at NNDC, with councillors from inland areas of the district often raising concerns that Cromer and other coastal communities get the lion's share of the council's budget. However, Lucy Shires, the Lib Dem portfolio holder for finance, reminded the pair of the recent investment into a new leisure centre in Fakenham. The sports hub and swimming pool, which is currently under construction, received £1.7 million from NNDC and an additional £9.85 million from the government's Levelling Up Fund. Ms Shire said, "Please be very mindful that this level of information was not asked for when it was Fakenham Leisure Centre, so there is no fairness for what you are asking for on either of the assets, and the Fakenham Leisure Centre project is far more money than this is. So if we're going to ask for fairness, then we need to ask fairly the questions that we are asking for investment across the district."
The construction of an assisted living facility in Stalham has been celebrated with a topping out ceremony. Albion Gardens is an extra care scheme delivered by Housing 21 and offers independent living and on-site care to people aged 55 and over. It consists of 61 accessible apartments, all within easy reach of Stalham Town Centre, and is due to open in the spring 2027. The new facilities include a cafe bistro, lounge, hair salon and gardens. Pets are welcome and couples can live together even if only one requires care. Prospective residents can apply to live in Albion Gardens through the council's housing register, Your Choice, Your Home, after having their care needs assessed and financial circumstances considered. Councillor Jill Boyle, portfolio holder for Housing and People Services at North Norfolk District Council, said, "I am delighted to see the progress being made with this development. It will be a great addition to the range and quality of housing for older people in North Norfolk and a great boost for Stalham. The scheme is funded with a grant from Homes England, Norfolk County Council and North Norfolk District Council."
A woman has told of her anger after her ex-partner was spared jail following a campaign of stalking that shattered her mental health and made her feel like a prisoner in her own home. Tanya Amis described the suspended sentence given to Ryan Hall as an absolute joke. Hall had previously admitted assaulting Miss Amis and had a restraining order imposed not to contact her or visit the home they previously shared. But while a judge described the harassment he subjected reported her to afterwards as serious, he gave him a suspended jail term, unpaid work, and a fresh restraining order when he appeared at King's Lynn Crown Court on Thursday, June the 4th. Hall, 36, of Hatch Meadow, North Walsham, had earlier admitted stalking Miss Ames, 30, for 3 months after the couple separated in February 2025. Pamela Munier, prosecuting, said he turned up at her home and workplace, sent abusive messages, continually tried to contact her, and posted material about her online. Mrs. Munier said he had caused Miss Ames a significant fear and distress, which affected her ability to work or feel safe in her own home. She added his conduct had also had a severe psychological impact on his victim, who had suffered flashbacks, panic attacks, and been diagnosed with PTSD. Miss Munier said Hall had a previous conviction for battery against Miss Ames on February the 2nd, 2025, and he stalked her after an order had been imposed not to contact her or attend her address. Lynn Shirley, in mitigation for Hall, said he accepted responsibility and was genuinely remorseful. She said he had attended the hospital where Miss Ames works because his father had been admitted. He has been very clear that he wants to move on and has no desire to resume contact, she said.
A140 bridge closure. A bridge on a major road will close during a scheme costing around £35,000. Norfolk County Council will carry out essential joint works on the Aylsham Bypass Bridge on the A140. The works require temporary overnight road closures from 7 p.m. to 5 a.m. for 5 nights to protect the public and workers. The project will run from June the 15th until June the 20th. An officially signed diversion route will be in place to accommodate HGVs, while other drivers are welcome to use alternative routes. Access will be maintained for properties and businesses from one end of the closure, but restrictions may apply as work progresses. Emergency services will be made aware of the closures. The project is being delivered by the County Council's Infrastructure Department, with support from its contractors. A spokesman for Norfolk County Council said, "The County Council thanks people for their patience while this bridge joint work is carried out."
A man has admitted theft after more than £60,000 was stolen from a Norfolk pub run by his family, which inspired a Sherlock Holmes story. Sam Stockton, 47, ran the company which operated the Hill House Inn pub in Haysborough with his wife Jenny. It was once visited by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. The couple, both of Dereham Road, Norwich, had been accused of stealing £63,572 from the business between January 2018 and November 2020. On Monday, Sam Stockton pleaded guilty to theft when he appeared at the Norwich Crown Court for a plea and trial preparation hearing. It is understood the plea was made on the basis the amount taken was between £48,000 and £53,000. Oliver Haswell, prosecuting, said it was likely to be an agreeable resolution to the case without the need for a Newton hearing, where the judge decides on any factual dispute between the prosecution and the defence. The defendant's wife, Jenny, also appeared in court but was not arraigned or asked to give a plea. In the light of her husband's guilty plea, it is understood the Crown Prosecution Service will not be seeking a trial for her. Andrew Oliver, who represents Sam Stockton, asked that a pre-sentence report be prepared on his client's behalf. Recorder Ruth Brander adjourned the sentencing until July 24, but warned Stockton all options, including immediate custody, remained open to the court. Our next few stories include Norfolk going to the polls again, relief in sight for a chronic back pain sufferer, a new future for Broad's Boatyard, and plans for a caravan park.
A by-election will be held next month, requiring 2,000 staff and 500 polling stations to select a new police and crime commissioner, despite the role being abolished in 2 years. Officials have confirmed the vote will go ahead on July the 16th to replace Sarah Taylor after her shock resignation last week. She stepped down on Thursday with immediate effect, citing family reasons. There had been questions over whether a vote would be held, given the roll is due to be scrapped. The huge cost, estimated at £2 million, of holding a county-wide vote, and the historically low turnout for the post. But under law, a by-election must be held when a PCC resigns with more than 6 months remaining on their term in office. There is no mechanism for an interim appointment in those circumstances. Sources say 2,000 members of staff will be needed to run the vote, with 500 polling stations established across all 84 county council divisions for Norfolk's 600,000-strong electorate. The cost of the election will be met by the Home Office. At the last Norfolk PCC election in 2024, just 21.31% of the electorate turned out. Turnout at previous contests have slumped below 15%.
An 81-year-old woman who has struggled with debilitating back pain for 3 years could finally be on the verge of getting treatment. Leslie Cook from Holt has been fighting to get care for the pain since it first appeared in 2023. She received a letter last week from the Pain Management Clinic, which said she was being listed for treatment. She has now been told that the waiting time could be 10 weeks. Ms. Cook said, "There are no guarantees, but possibly this is likely. At the moment, I am only crossing my fingers." Her back pain saw her first referred to Cromer Hospital and x-rays and sessions with the physio. Next came a visit to the Norfolk and Norwich University Hospital, where she was told she was too old for surgery, but that steroid injections might help. That was followed by costly private consultations, being added to the NHS waiting list, and finally a consultation with the Pain Management Clinic. But she has still not received the injections which she believes would significantly improve her life. Ms. Cook received a call last week from a woman at the Pain Management Clinic. She said, "Her attitude was much nicer and understanding of my back problem. She has said that she has learned of my story and said she fully understands the pain that I have and how long I have waited." So she says they are now thinking that it will be more like 10 and a half weeks waiting instead of the 38 weeks. Previously, Chris Cobb, NNUH Chief Operating Officer, has said, "We are very sorry to anyone waiting longer than expected for investigations and treatment and know we have more to do. We continually review our waiting lists and we are prioritising cancer, the most urgent and the longest waiting patients."
A luxury yacht builder is set to close its facility on the south coast to focus its attention on its Norfolk base. Oyster Yachts has announced it will be winding down all production at its leased site at Southampton Saxon Wharf by the end of the year. The company said it will instead be concentrating investment at its Wroxham Boatyard, where it will continue to build yachts. A spokesperson said the restructuring will support a more focused and resilient operating model, with Wroxham as Oyster's centre of excellence for UK manufacturing. The Blue Water Sailing Yacht Builder which also has a base in Ipswich, is consulting workers at the Southampton facility about redundancies in manufacturing, support and administrative roles, but would not say how many posts are at risk or how many staff are currently employed at the site. The company employs more than 600 people globally. There is no impact on yachts currently in build or future orders, a spokesperson said. We continue to build and deliver yachts as planned. The company also said it remains fully supported by owner and chairman Richard Hadida and the board, adding, yacht production at Wroxham continues as planned.
Revised plans to increase the number of caravan pitches at a Norfolk railway station have been unveiled. The proposals were put forward by Whitwell and Reefham Station as part of an expansion of the site. A total of 15 pitches were originally planned, but this has been reduced to 5 static caravans and 2 shepherd's huts. It follows objections about the impact on highway safety and being too similar to a previously refused application. The 3.5-acre campsite can be accessed off Whitwell Road via a track and is used by visitors to the railway and volunteers who work and stay there. It offers spaces for caravans, motorhomes and tents, along with some hard-standing pitches. A planning statement on behalf of the station said the proposals will make better use of the site and bring additional people to the railway. The statement added that the plans do not change access or amenity provision and say reducing the number of pitches would help to reduce traffic and vehicle movement on the road. It continued, our client purchased the railway station some years ago and has invested a considerable amount of money to build up the business, which brings money and people into the area. Our client did not choose to buy a vacant site and build a railway station in this location. Instead, he chose to buy an existing site which contained a lot of history and buildings of architectural merit and build it up into what it is today. Yet, despite all of this, he is being penalised due to the apparent poor road network and lack of footpath which serves the site, all of which is out of the control of our client. It is true to say that the layout and access roads to the site are not ideal. However, this can be said about most visitor attractions and roads in Norfolk. The question is, do the council wish to support this business, to help it grow, employ more local people, bring visitors to the area to spend money in local shops and stay in overnight accommodation? The application can be viewed on the Broadland District Council planning portal using the reference 2025/3411.
A much-loved cafe near a former train station has shut down. Blackham Station Cafe, which is next to Reefham's disused railway station that closed to passengers in 1952, has permanently closed. Also known as Reefham Station Cafe, the closure was announced in an all-caps Facebook post made by the eatery on May 27. Larkin Going, the business advisory firm, has confirmed that they have been instructed to assist the directors of Blackham Station Cafe in placing the company into voluntary liquidation. Despite this, the business has yet to officially enter liquidation. The closure of the cafe remains unexplained, and the owners, Nicola and Brandon Dixon, have declined to comment. It is understood that several jobs have been lost as a result. The cafe was taken over by new owners in November 2024. It was hoped they would transform the site into the hub of Reefham, offering a warm space, rich coffee and delicious food. Previously, the business was run by Joanna and Simon Chipperfield, who took over the site in August 2020.
A major fire that tore through part of a well-known Norfolk Broads boatyard has been ruled as accidental following an investigation. The blaze ripped through the roof of a Landmore's building on Marsh Road in Hoverton in the early hours of Saturday, May the 23rd. Investigators have since confirmed that there was nothing suspicious about the incident. Although the exact cause has not been disclosed, the fire brigade says it was accidental. Fire crews from Wroxham, Sprowston, Earlham, Carrow, Stalham and King's Lynn worked through the night to bring the fire under control. The alarm was raised shortly after midnight, with firefighters spending several hours tackling the flames before remaining on site until around 7 a.m. to ensure the area was safe. Photographs taken afterwards show significant damage to a building at the long-established boatyard. The fire affected a wet boat shed and two vessels that were undergoing maintenance at the time. People arriving in the area later that morning described their shock at the scale of the damage. The company has been building boats in Wroxham and Hoverton since 1923 and is a long-standing presence on the Broads.
A councillor has pledged to tackle mobile phone black spots said to be plaguing his area. Matthew Taylor, recently elected county councillor for the Stalham division, has said that improving signal is one of his top priorities. The areas of Sea Pauling, Waxham, Haysborough, Lessingham and Honing have been rated as having very poor mobile coverage, while East Ruston, Brumstead, Ingham, Hickling and Horsey are ranked as poor. Mr. Taylor says he is already working with telecoms providers, infrastructure companies and local stakeholders to address the issues. He added, "The current situation simply isn't good enough. In the modern world, people depend on a good, reliable phone signal for work, connectivity and public safety. Across the parishes of the Stalham Division, we have two fantastic lifeboat crews and many beautiful beaches that attract significant numbers of visitors each year. If something goes wrong, people need to be able to make a call. Both for those who live here and for those who visit, improving signal coverage is an absolute priority." Val Bird, chairman of Sea Pauling and Waxham Parish Council, said, "Living in a rural community like Sea Pauling and Waxham means connectivity is an absolute necessity. In this digital world, our parishioners feel left behind, and the Parish Council are determined to make this issue a priority. We welcome the valued support of Councillor Taylor and will continue to work alongside him and the network providers in order to boost much needed coverage in our area."
Dog walkers have been warned to stay alert on the North Norfolk coast as a dangerous substance washes up. Toll Barn Veterinary Centre, based in North Walsham, has issued an alert about reports of palm oil on the beach at Munsley. While palm oil is not inherently toxic in small amounts and is sometimes included in pet foods, the larger quantities found on beaches can be highly dangerous and may be contaminated with toxins from the sea. If a dog ingests a lot of palm oil, it can also cause vomiting and dangerous intestinal blockages. Washed up palm oil often appears as waxy, yellow, white or orange lumps. We have had reports of palm oil being washed up on beaches at Munsley and have treated dogs who have ingested some of this palm oil, a Toll Barn spokesman said. Please take care when walking your dogs on the beach and keep them on a lead if you are worried they may scavenge. Palm oil can cause severe vomiting and intestinal obstruction if ingested, so please seek veterinary advice as soon as possible if you think your dog may have ingested it.
You're listening to edition number 2021 of The Mardler, recorded on Friday the 12th of June 2026. Still to come, there are items about RNLI success, an ageing theatre star, and of course the Mardler magazine supplement. But before all of that,
some local events.
Sunday, 14th of June, RAF Bertram Newton Heritage Centre, at 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. A four-roomed museum commemorating the history of this station between 1918 and 1962. Bertram Newton near King's Lynn. Ian Jacklin, 50, at btinternet.com 01485528286.
Also on Sunday the 14th of June, Boughton Open Gardens. Wander around Boughton to see the gardens. The tickets are £6 per adult. Accompanied under 16s are free. There are refreshments at All Saints Church. The address is All Saints Church, Church Lane, Boughton, near King's Lynn. Details at allsaintsboughton@gmail.com or telephone 0799 011 1535.
Swallowtail Day, NWT Hickling Broad Boat Trip. At 11 a.m, also at noon, and 1:30 p.m, 2:30 p.m, and 3:30 p.m. £13.18, book via norfolkwildlifetrust.org.uk. Explore Hickling Broad by boat in search of the rare swallowtail butterfly and experience an unforgettable encounter with nature. NWT Hickling Broad and Marshes Nature Reserve, Stub Road, Hickling. Info at norfolkwildlifetrust.org.uk. 01603 625540.
Norwich Bead Fair, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Beads and pearls for the home jewellery maker. Many new semi-precious beads just imported into the UK. Free entry and refreshments. Best Western George Hotel, Newmarket Road, Norwich. Email nigel@beadsupnorth.co.uk. We turn now to this week's Mardler magazine supplement, where we hear about Dawn French's new book, The 125th Birthday of Cromer Pier, A Young Girl's Nature Discovery, and an introduction to a clay guide.
As the Norfolk Wildlife Trust celebrates its centenary, Natalie Douglas meets volunteer reserve guide David North, where it all began, at the Trust's Cly Marshes Nature Reserve. From North Norfolk Living, March 2026. Cly Marshes is a place that makes you look up. Not just at the birds, though they are everywhere, but at the sky itself, the cloudscapes, the rainbows, the passing storms rolling in off the coast, the wind always a presence, the wide horizons that remind you, gently but firmly, that nature is larger than you are. For David North, Cly has been life-changing in the truest sense. It's a reserve he returns to in every mood, and one that meets him with moods of its own. Dawn and dusk, peaceful summer days, or the wild drama of winter weather. Relationships with place, he says, like those with people, deepen over time. Paying deep attention deepens love, knowledge, and understanding. That sense of connection lies at the heart of David's story and at the heart of Norfolk Wildlife Trust's centenary year. Founded in 1926, Norfolk Wildlife Trust was the first of its kind, born from the purchase of Clye Marshes as a breeding bird sanctuary to be held in perpetuity. 100 years on, Clye remains its spiritual home. Conservation for David was never a late discovery. It began in childhood, nurtured by parents, bird clubs, and heroes like David Attenborough, Gerald Durrell, Peter Scott, and David Bellamy. Birds became his first great love, and Clye, he says, remains connected to half the planet through migration. It's busier than Heathrow every day, he smiles, with arrivals and departures written across the marsh. In winter, great skeins of pink-footed geese and brent fill the sky. Widgeon whistle over the freshwater pools. Curlews and redshanks call across the open landscape. In summer, the reed beds are alive with sound. Sedge warblers, reed warblers, and bearded tits. Swallows that choose to nest in the hides, delighting visitors. Offshore, terns call and plunge dive for silver fish. Every visit is different, always full of beauty. Over the decades, David has watched Clye Marshes evolve. The most significant changes, he says, have been in how people experience the reserve. The opening of the larger visitor centre in 2007, and later the Simon Aspinall Wildlife Education Centre, bringing more people into closer contact with nature than ever before. The landscape itself has also reminded everyone of its power. David speaks vividly of December 2013, the storm surge that pushed seawater across the reserve and shifted millions of tons of shingle in a single night. For a time, it seemed the freshwater marsh might become salt marsh forever. Then, within weeks, natural processes sealed the breaches again. To witness nature's forces shaping the landscape on that scale, he says, is a very moving experience. In a world that can feel increasingly disconnected from nature, David's hope is simple: that visitors leave with a deepened love of wild places and the feeling that they're not separate from nature, but part of it. That sense of belonging, he believes, is where care and protection begin.
A holiday discovery leads to wildlife history. Bill Curtis and Tom Layton reveal all. Taken from the Times newspaper, Thursday, April 23, 2026. While most children come home from a day by the river with muddy shoes or a pocket full of stones, Evie Hill returned with one of the world's most rarest amphibians. The 10-year-old was on holiday and playing under a bridge near the River Ogmore in Bridgend, South Wales, when she spotted an endangered Mexican axolotl. With fewer than 1,000 left in the wild, the discovery left her mother, Melanie, in shock, surprise and disbelief. Evie has named the amphibian Dippy. She said Evie has always loved wildlife and was constantly finding newts, bugs and other creatures, but has never come across something so rare. Evie's discovery is the first documented sighting of an oxalot in the wild in Britain. Evie told how she found the 9-inch long amphibian. I went down to the bank and there was this green mat. I lifted it up and there was an oxalot there, she told the BBC. I was like, oh my God, that's an oxalot. Mom, there's an oxalot in the river. At first, her mother was sceptical. She thought seeing a newt or something. She said, Evie's always finding things like this, not oxalots, but newts and bugs. It was just a complete surprise to see that she was actually holding this oxalot. I never even knew that they could grow that big, and now here I am with one in my kitchen. It is illegal to release or leave non-native species in the wild, so the family decided to take the oxalot home to Leicester and report their findings. They spent hours researching ways to keep it healthy and said they had no regrets about bringing it home and cutting their holiday short. Experts say oxalots can reach a foot in length, but on average grow to about 9 inches. Evie has named it Dippy, and it has been a big hit at school. Everybody at school is fascinated about the story of Dippy, she said. I think it's really interesting. Oxalots have seen a surge in popularity as pets after they were featured in video games such as Minecraft and Roblox. Chris Newman, director of the National Centre for Reptile Welfare, said Evie had probably saved the oxalot's life. This is the first time one has been documented in the UK, and it would not have lived very long if Evie hadn't seen it, he said. Predatory animals would have had it for lunch, and it already had bite marks on its back.
Comedian Dawn French has a new novel out, Enough. Jane Mulcairns meets the comic legend. From The Times, May the 14th, 2026. Halfway through typing up the longhand draft of Dawn French's latest novel, I don't own a computer, the comedian confesses, her PA of 34 years, Sue, called her concerned. There was a tone in her voice, and I thought, oh, she's doubting one of the characters, French recalls. But she just said, are you all right? French sighs and gives a wry chuckle. That was the first time I thought, oh dear, I'm going to have to deal with people checking in on me. I'll have to deflect people's thoughts that I might not be okay. It is a legitimate question. French, beloved fictitious vicar, one half of the UK's most famous female comedy duo, bona fide in national treasure, and now best-selling novelist, has written a story about suicide. I don't want people to think that I'm writing my plan. I'm not, she insists. Yet, in writing it, I've faced a lot of my thoughts and fears about it. It's helpful to put your face in the darkness and then come up and breathe fresh air afterwards. In September 1977, when French was 19, her father, Dennis, an RAF engineer, took his own life. He was 45. Suicide lives in my brain in a way it might not for somebody who hasn't experienced it so closely, she says. And as I've got older, I want to talk about the big things. I set out to write something I'm a bit afraid to admit, that getting older is difficult, end of life is difficult, suicide is difficult. There is an awful lot of the author in her new novel. Enough is set in Cornwall, where French was raised and has lived for the past 2 decades, with a protagonist, Etta, busily plotting her own demise, who is precisely French's age, 68. The book's title is not intended as a negative. Etta hasn't had enough, but rather French explains it is enough. And she has a point. What more selfless act could you make than sacrifice your life so that your children don't have to deal with the crunchy, grim part of it? French's daughter Billy, whom she adopted as a baby with her first husband Lenny Henry, is now 34 and lives close by with a daughter of her own. French also has an adult stepson and stepdaughter, Ollie, 31, and Lily, 34, via her second husband, the charity executive Mark Bignall, whom she married in 2013. As I approach older age, I do think about it. I don't think I would ever make this choice, French says, by which she means suicide. But I can understand why somebody would. When you lose your dad at 19 and you have this whole life to get through, all those stages of grief, from being perplexed to sadness, anger, understanding and forgiveness, I think you have claimed the right a little bit to write about this with some optimism is the wrong word. But with some positive aspect to it, she says. It's very hard when you've had a suicide in your family to claim that you had a great dad, she says. Because if you had a great dad, then why did that happen? That father-daughter dynamic is absolutely key for women, French believes. You measure every other male by your dad, she says. Now, if your dad's rubbish, you're going to suffer all sorts of rubbish. But if you've had a great dad, why would you settle for less than that? That's your template. Not to say that you can't make some mistakes. We all do. But you value yourself if you've been valued by your dad.
Cromer Pier is 125 years old this year. Caroline McGee finds out more. North Norfolk Living, May 2026. One of the last surviving, fully functioning piers, this seaside antique is worthy of all the love and attention we can lavish on it. The 500-foot structure has survived multiple storms and disasters since it opened in 1901. That was the year of Queen Victoria's death, a time when Britain still had an empire, a time before computers and air travel, the point at which Winston Churchill arrived on the political scene and made his maiden speech in the House of Commons on the subject of the Boer War. While the world has changed out of all recognition since then, the pier still rules the waves on the Cromer seafront. Designed by Douglas and Arnott in 1900, it was built at a cost of £17,000, possibly more than £2 million in today's money, extending 500 feet into the North Sea with glass shelters and a bandstand on the end. A few years later, the bandstand was roofed over to make a pavilion. Then came the stage. Now it is listed Grade 2, one of only 55 piers left on Britain's coast, and it has been made Pier of the Year three times in 2000, 2015 and 2024 by the National Piers Society, which was started by Sir John Betjeman in 1979 and now has Dame Joan Bakewell and Giles Brandreth as patrons. The Society praised it for its resilience and complete absence of any amusement machines or other modern artefacts. it is sobering to remember how modest its beginnings were. In 1391, it was no more than a rickety wooden jetty, built so that produce from Norfolk could be loaded onto boats and traded in other parts of the country. More than two centuries later, the jetty is mentioned in a letter sent by Queen Elizabeth, giving Cromer written permission to sell wheat, barley and malt and spend the profits on the upkeep of the jetty and town. North Sea tides and weather raged as ferociously as only they know how, which meant the structure had to be constantly repaired and rebuilt. It wasn't until 1901 that the pier we know and love was opened. There are few activities more enjoyable than walking along the pier to admire the views and watch fishermen angling for mackerel and bass, or families crabbing in the summer. Step on it in winter and you have the thrill of feeling the wild sea beneath your feet. Small wonder then that the structure needs large amounts of investment to keep it upright. In 1993, a 100-ton rig crashed over it, cutting it in half and leaving the lifeboat station and pavilion theatre isolated on the seaward end. Since then, there has been a constant programme of reconstruction and maintenance. Good intentions are, however, constantly undermined by the weather. In 2012, North Norfolk District Council launched a multi-million pound effort to strengthen the structure, sending a six-strong team of abseilers to swing along the underside and deep-sea divers round the legs and pilings, as well as replacing the decking. Almost as soon as this was finished, the 2013 tidal surge left six people marooned on the end. The pier attracts thousands of pleasure lovers each year, offering them a dramatic view of the town itself, the brightly coloured seafront houses and the Hotel de Paris. But it is also where thousands flock every summer to the Pavilion Theatre to see the only full-season end of the pier show in the country. "The theatre is the heartbeat of the pier, and the pier is the heartbeat of Cromer," says Sean Garrett, General Manager. "Cromer Pier has been really treasured. It makes an unbelievably precious contribution in the town. If it weren't here, Cromer would be a different place." And those items conclude this week's magazine supplement. Our thanks go to the authors of these articles for their contributions.
Returning to the news, our penultimate selection of articles include a tribute to a young festival goer, a cut to Coast Guard fees, plans to move a coastal graveyard, and a band's fundraising drive.
A music festival could pay tribute to a young man who died with a rare form of dementia. This year's Reefham Festival will take place on August the 8th and 9th, with Scottish singer Callum Beattie topping the bill. Mr. Beattie is looking to dedicate a song to Andre Yarram, who was one of his biggest fans. Andre died aged just 24 on December the 27th, 2025. He was the youngest person to be diagnosed with frontotemporal dementia, a condition which affects just 0.1% of the population due to a protein mutation in 2024. Sam Fairbairn, Andre's mother, said Andre and his favourite singer previously met at last year's festival when the family were invited as guests. She added, It was one of the last things he got to do before he became really ill. Andre was so happy. We had a message from Callum's security, who said they were all really honoured to meet him. Callum did a shout out to Andre on stage. He got all the crowd to cheer for Andre as well, and it was such a special moment. Andre was 22 when he was first told of his shock diagnosis and was hospitalised with an infection in December 2025. Andre, who spent time living in Norwich and Dereham, spent his last weeks at Priscilla Bacon Lodge in Norwich and died on December the 27th. Mrs. Fairbairn previously described her son as a cheeky lad and having a heart of gold. She said, "When Callum heard that Andre died, he was on tour at the time, and it hit him and the rest of the crew really hard. We are planning to attend the festival this year, and I know Andre will be looking down. We'll definitely raise a glass to him." A spokeswoman for Reefham Festival confirmed the idea for a tribute song was in the early stages, but Callum Beattie is keen to do it. The festival is run by volunteers, with all proceeds reinvested into the event and charitable causes. Those attending will be encouraged to download the tribute live track on a new platform called T-Ticker for £1, with proceeds going to help in the fight against dementia.
A brass band has launched an urgent appeal to raise funds to repair its base. Stalham Brass Band, which has served its North Norfolk community for 175 years, has issued an urgent appeal for support after storms left its base severely damaged. Water has poured into the building, damaging the carpet, walls and part of the music library. Tim Thirst, who has spent more than 60 years with the band and served over 25 years as its director of music, said, "If you can contribute, no matter the amount, it will make a real difference in preserving this cherished space. Your support will help ensure the band can continue to bring joy to the community for many years to come. The band is seeking to raise £50,000 for urgent repairs. The band room is said to be more than just a place to play music, and it is a hub for connection and creativity for young and old. A GoFundMe campaign has been launched to collect donations and can be found at www.gofundme.com/f/help-repair-the-roof-for-stalham-brass-band.
The remains of 119 sailors who drowned when their warship sank off the Norfolk coast could be exhumed to prevent their remains from being exposed by coastal erosion. The men were buried in Haysborough churchyard when HMS Invincible sank while sailing to join Admiral Nelson's fleet at the Battle of Copenhagen in 1801. Of the 590 crew on board, just 190 survived, and the bodies that were recovered were carried to St Mary the Virgin Church, as it was the nearest to the wreck. However, the erosion now threatening the churchyard has led to calls for the men to be dug up and buried in the sea, as close as possible to where they drowned. North Norfolk District Council, NNDC, has agreed to conduct a ground-penetrating radar survey of the graveyard later this summer to pinpoint the exact location of the mass grave for a possible exhumation. The survey follows a request from the 1805 Club, an international charity dedicated to preserving the heritage of Georgian-era sailors, which has offered to use its Royal Naval connections to help carry out the exhumation. Stephen Howarth, a senior advisor for the club, said, "In a few decades, that graveyard is going to be eaten away. The 1801 disaster was such a huge tragedy, such a great loss of life, especially when the fleet was en route to Denmark. They were buried on land as a matter of haste and urgency, and at the time they did not pay much attention to the erosion that was already taking place on the coast. We felt they should be buried at sea and as near as possible to HMS Invincible. Most of those who drowned were never identified. Among the few known was the ship's captain, John Rennie, who came agonisingly close to reaching a rescue boat. Contemporary reports say that he almost made it to a vessel, but then, exhausted with fatigue, he calmly resigned himself to his fate. The disaster was blamed on the ship's pilot, who had ignored warnings about shallow sand ridges lurking off the Norfolk coast. Those washed ashore at Haysborough were carried to St Mary's in cartloads for burial. The mass grave went unmarked for nearly two centuries, until 1998, when the grave was rediscovered by chance in the 1990s during drainage works. Following the discovery, a stone was laid above it, bearing the biblical inscription, "And the sea gave up the dead that were in it."
Coast Guard volunteers in Norfolk will no longer be paid for attending call-outs and training sessions following a landmark legal ruling. It found that volunteer Coast Guards who received payments for their work could legally be classed as workers rather than volunteers. The decision comes in a week where 15 people across the nation, including one in Norfolk, have died after getting into trouble in the water. Coast Guard rescue officers can claim remuneration of just over £11 an hour when responding to incidents, with a minimum payment equivalent to 3 hours, even if a call-out is resolved more quickly. The payments were designed to compensate volunteers for disruption to their employment and family lives, rather than act as a salary. Such a move has raised questions and doubts over the agency's ability to both operate and recruit new members, with one anonymous volunteer telling the Daily Mail that members from across the country were already resigning. A Maritime and Coast Guard Agency spokesperson said that the move had been made to best protect the future of the service. He continued, "This decision follows a legal judgment, which means we need to change how the service operates. This new model protects choice, flexibility, and the ability for people to volunteer alongside their primary employment. We deeply value and recognise the significant service Coast Guard rescue officers provide along our coastline, and we will be supporting them during this transition. The Coast Guard Rescue Service will continue to maintain a robust, effective search and rescue response, ensuring the highest quality of service and levels of safety."
A contemporary artist is set to transform an auction house into an immersive art installation. Sick Boy will showcase a solo exhibition and site-specific installation at Bishop and Miller in Glanford, North Norfolk, from June 19 to July 5. The exhibition, titled Fair Warning, will utilise the auction house's collection of antiques and historical artefacts, creating a new body of work that spans painting, sculpture and installation. The exhibition will be open daily from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
A Norfolk-based fashion brand has been named as one of the fastest-growing companies in the country. Blakely Clothing, ranked at number 57 in the Sunday Times 100, a national list of Britain's 100 fastest growing private businesses, with the highest annual growth in sales over the last 3 years. The company achieved an annual sales growth of 78.99%, reaching £84.1 million in its most recent financial year, according to the publication. Blakely Clothing was also one of 8 East of England companies to make the national ranking. The brand, which makes men's and women's clothing, was founded by Gareth Newman in 2012. He spent 2 years teaching himself Photoshop, finding suppliers, and designing a website before officially launching the company online in 2012. Its name is inspired by the North Norfolk village of Blakeney, near where Mr. Newman's father grew up. John Yeomans, business editor of the Sunday Times, said, "The biggest trend over the last 5 years is the rise of consumer brands, with food, drink, fashion and beauty companies now making up nearly half the list."
Work is underway on a new development of affordable homes. St Bennet's Place in Stalham will deliver 34 properties, including 25 for affordable rent and 9 available through shared ownership. The scheme is being delivered by Flagship Homes, part of Bromford Flagship Live West, the country's biggest provider of new affordable housing. Tony Tan, Managing Director of Flagship Homes, said, "St Bennet's Place will deliver 34 affordable homes, a blend of homes for rent and for shared ownership, giving local people a genuine route to a secure and affordable place to live." The homes will be offered to those on the local housing register, with rents capped at the local housing allowance rate. The project is being delivered in partnership with North Norfolk District Council and is part funded through Homes England's Affordable Homes Programme. Councillor Jill Boyle, portfolio holder for Housing and People Services at NNDC, said, "We're delighted to be working with Flagship on this new development for Stalham, bringing high quality, new, affordable homes to the town." The site is being developed by MedCentres, a Hampshire-based firm, with its in-house contractor HCC Construction. Paul Brand, Associate Development Director at MedCentres, said, "This development represents our first partnership with Flagship to deliver much-needed affordable housing for the people of Stalham and the wider community, for which there is a demonstrable need." The first homes at St Bennet's Place are expected to be ready for occupation in early 2027.
Two redundant rural barns are set to be turned into a pair of new homes. North Norfolk District Council has agreed plans to convert the properties at Guestwick near Reefham. A planning statement said both buildings on Green Lane would be converted into two-bedroom houses. It added that the design would be sympathetic to the existing buildings and their surroundings. The existing site benefits from mature landscaping that will be retained, it said. The trees on site will not be affected by the construction process, as all construction will be outside of the canopies. An ecological survey said nearby ponds were unlikely to contain newts and bats were not thought to roost in the barns. It added work would need to be carried out outside the bird nesting season and an alternative nesting box provided for a barn owl, which has been seen in one or two of the buildings. Plans were approved on condition work begins within 3 years and existing clay pan tiles would be reused as part of any re-roofing of the building.
Our last few articles cover an ageing theatre star, the return of a popular beer festival, inquest into a motorcyclist's death, and an RNLI success story.
She may be 92, admits her hearing has gone a little, and has been compared to national treasure Dame Judi Dench. But retired teacher from Holt, Thelma Tor, is determined the show must go on as she prepares to take the stage at Sheringham Little Theatre in the upcoming production of Sandcastles. Thelma Tor has been acting since her school days in the 1930s and will play Mrs. Billet, a cranky mother of a beach hut owner. She said, "I still get a buzz from being on stage and doing rehearsals. I try to do one production a year, if there's a part suitable for me. My hearing's gone a little, but I can still pick up my cues on stage if other cast members are projecting their voices clearly, as they should." She first joined local community drama in the 1940s, where she played a fairy in A Midsummer Night's Dream. While studying French at Bristol University, she joined the Operatic Society and went on to join the company drama group while working at Shell. She took a short break from drama when working in Canada and raising two children, but returned in the 1980s and 90s back in Kent. She moved to Norfolk aged 70 so she could be near one of her daughters and joined the Sheringham Players. The 92-year-old is a big fan of Dame Judi Dench because of her longevity and versatility, although she's a youngster at 91. Libby Henshaw, longtime friend, fellow cast member, and currently directing her in Sandcastles, said, "Thelma is a great character actress. I am 78 and Thelma is an inspiration for me to keep going. I hope I'm as good as her at 92. Judi Dench might be a national treasure, but Thelma is our local treasure." The show is running from June the 24th to the 26th, and tickets can be bought from www.sheringhamlittletheatre.com or call the box office on 01263 822 347.
A man killed when his motorcycle left the road and hit a tree as he rode along a popular biking route through the Broads has been named. Steve Devon Arami crashed on the A1062, which runs from Potter Heigham to Hofton, near to the village of Horning, while riding a high-performance Ducati Panigale. The 54-year-old, who worked as a regional claims manager, died at the scene, becoming the ninth biker to be killed on Norfolk roads this year. An inquest into his death opened at Norfolk Coroner's Court on June 3rd. The brief hearing was told Mr. Rami from Hemsby had died of multiple injuries in the crash on May 26th and was formally identified by his wife Joanna Rami. Robin Wayell, Norfolk's assistant coroner, then adjourned the hearing while investigations continued into the circumstances of the crash. It is due to resume on December 9. Police have issued road safety warnings in response to the high number of biker deaths so far this year. They have urged bikers to refresh their skills, whilst also urging car drivers to do more to help keep motorcyclists safe. The force has also hosted bike safety events. Inspector Will Drummond said, "We have already seen a number of motorcyclists lose their lives on our roads this year, and every one of these incidents is a tragic reminder how vulnerable riders can be. We are asking drivers to recognise the vital role they play in preventing further tragedies. Look twice at junctions, give motorcyclists space and be patient on rural roads. A moment of extra care could be the difference between someone getting home safely and a life being lost." One of the other bikers killed this year, also a man in his 50s, died in a crash on the same road, the A1062, also near Horning, on April 4.
Two RNLI crew members are on the crest of a wave after they qualified as navigators. Ellis Spears and Tom Hun, volunteers at the RNLI's Haysborough station sailed through their navigation pass out with high pass marks, passing theory and practical assessments under the guidance of an RNLI assessor on Tuesday, June the 2nd. Mr. Spears said, "I'm so pleased to have passed. We are trained at the station to exceptional standards. I must thank my family for giving me the time and space to complete this training. They started with a theory test, which both passed with high pass marks. This was followed by a practical assessment on the water, during which the pair were tested separately on navigation skills and search patterns. Both passed with flying colours." Mr. Hun said, "Hard work and persistence paid off. Couldn't have done it without the amazing team and family support." Rachel Kirkham, lifeboat operations manager at the station, congratulated the new navigators and praised the wider team's efforts. She said, "It gives me great delight to say Ellis and Tom have passed out as navigators. The dedication and hard work certainly paid off. Thank you to the whole team for your assistance. We may be small, but we are mighty." Ms. Kirkham also highlighted ongoing training and the need for new recruits across all roles. She said, "Training is ongoing. We have two crew working through their navigation training and new crew who are starting their crew plan training to help the station go from strength to strength. We are always looking for new crew, shore crew, water safety, shop, visitor centre and fundraising volunteers to join our team at Haysborough. If interested, please visit the station at Cart Gap, Haysborough, or call 01692 583269 and leave your name and number and we will get back to you. Please note, the station is not manned all the time."
A beer festival will return this summer, offering a weekend packed with live music, street food, and drinks from Norfolk's longest bar. The event will take place in North Walsham's Memorial Park on August the 7th and August the 8th, a Friday and Saturday. The volunteer-run festival promises a huge selection, many from Norfolk breweries, all poured along what organisers have dubbed the county's longest bar. A dedicated gin and rum bar and a wine bar are also set to return, making it easy to join in the fun, even if beer is not your usual tipple. Across the 2 days, there will be a packed programme of performances. Visitors can also work their way around a lineup of food stalls, serving everything from burgers and pizzas to lighter bites, coffee and cake. The festival is organised by North Walsham and District Round Table, and every pint pulled helps to raise money for local charities and good causes. Gates open from 5 p.m. on the Friday and from midday on the Saturday. Tickets are on sale now online, and organisers are encouraging people to book ahead, with previous years proving popular.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of The Mardler, with readings from the North Norfolk News. If you have any comments or queries, you can contact our listener liaison officer, Imogen Waterson, on 01263 587610.
Perhaps we should just mention that if you have a smartphone, tablet or computer, or know someone who has, you can listen to this and other editions online at mardler.org.uk. You can also use an Alexa smart speaker, a variety of smart phone apps, or even a telephone call to listen. Find out the details on our website, mardler.org.uk.
We rely on receiving your returned memory sticks and pouches so that we can continue to send you new editions each week. So please remember to return the pouch and memory stick promptly, making sure to reverse the address label first.
The sound engineer today was David Mitchell. Editing and producing this issue was Rick Waghorn.
Our colleagues in the copying and dispatch room join us in wishing you the best of health, and we look forward to joining you again in a week's time. But for now, it's cheerio!